Here to unveil our key survey results is Baker Strategy Group Managing Partner, David Baker. David?
Thank you, and happy 2019 to all. We're delighted to be here today to present the results of the 7th Annual Michigan Economic Outlook Survey. This program began in 2013 as an effort to gather feedback from Michiganders working in all three of our sectors, business, nonprofit, and government, with one central theme: to make Michigan a great place to start and grow a business. Special thanks are due to Steve Gregorian and the Detroit Economic Club, supporters of this program since its inception. Thanks also to Sherry Petrus with the CFI Group and Jimmy Hsiao with Logic Solutions. Also thanks to Don Hart, Diane Keller, and Dr. Matt Brown for their consults. Dr. Matt Brown is from Albion, everybody. We'd like to also thank over 500 chambers, business associations, and economic development groups who distributed the survey and helped us collect almost 17,000 responses over the 7-year period. Michigan's population is at 10 million, with a labor force of 4.9 million, and an unemployment labor force of 4.7, which gives it about a 3.9% unemployment rate, with a GDP of roughly $530 billion. So it turns out that the Michigan workforce sector breakdown is similar to the distribution of the survey responses in Michigan, so we feel pretty good about the distribution. For timing, the program runs for a month and begins 1 week after elections to allow some of the political dust to settle. This year, the elections were on November 9th, so survey ran November 13th through the 14th. And for the measurement, we borrow an approach used by Ann Arbor-based consulting firm CFI Group, founding member of the American Customer Satisfaction Index. The CFI Group approach asks questions on a 1 to 10 scale for greater measurement precision, and then translates results to a 0 to 100. So we use this method for our reporting. Okay, on to the results. The short-term outlook for Michigan in 2019 looks strong. The six-month outlook is 79, dropping only a point from last year's six-year high of 80. Historically, Michigan has run 2 to 4 points above the U.S. average for about the last 4 years. A slight dip as we head into 2019 is consistent with the movements of the U.S. average and seems to be more connected to the national economic and policy issues than Michigan-specific activity. For the longer term, there are three measures where Michigan's above-average scores show some concerning dips for 2019. Michigan has been more business-friendly than the U.S. average for 3 years. But this year, we see some softening as Michigan slipped 3 points this year while the U.S. average moved up 2 points. The good news is that Michigan still remains above the U.S. average. Scores for Michigan being on the right track follow a similar pattern where Michigan dipped 2 points and the U.S. average rose 2 points during the same one-year period. And finally, the score for the likelihood to recommend Michigan as a great place to grow a business fell 5 points in 2019 and is now at 76, a point below the U.S. state average for 77. A portion of this drop might be attributed to some of the economic news that broke during the survey period. In any case, 76 is still a high score, and it's the highest we've seen since 2013, other than 2018. Other measures are on par with the U.S. average: 81 for a great state to raise a family, 70 for a great state for young professionals and a place to start and grow a business, and 68 for a strong, vibrant economy. But 2019 might be a year to focus on regional activity. You can visit Michigan.gov to learn more about how the MEDC organizes prosperity regions to help promote the regional activity in Michigan. At the regional level, there are four measures worth noting for 2019. Skilled, educated talent available for hire continues to be low, but it is one of the few measures that moved up for 2019, even as the U.S. state average fell. So efforts dedicated to addressing talent availability in Michigan appear to be having an effect. Economic regions with a forward-looking culture that embrace entrepreneurialism provide a place where startups and businesses can thrive. Scores peaked last year, but slipped as we head into 2019. However, Michigan still scores 4 points above the U.S. average. Education, on the other hand, remains low. It's one of the only measures that consistently scores below the U.S. average, so continued efforts to improve the education systems in our regions are needed. And finally, the likelihood to recommend score for economic regions for Michigan follows a similar pattern for most of our other measures, but continues to outperform the U.S. average. So overall, there is some concern about the uncertainty as we head into 2019, but Michiganders say that the outlook remains healthy. Thank you, and I'm honored to hand this back over to the esteemed panel for insights for Michigan in 2019. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Reaction, gentlemen? Top line? Kevin?
I think it's generally trending in the direction that we want to trend it. I think there's hope that we can stay focused on what we do well. I think the indicators suggest also that there is a need to continue to invest in education. There's a need to continue to invest in infrastructure. And if we are committed to do that, I think, you know, those trends will continue to move in the direction we want to move in.
Yeah, I think I'm still bullish on 2019. Mm-hmm. I think the outlook suggests maybe we're going to have to work harder this year. But I think still the numbers look very positive, and I think, you know, the trends we see in our business is things look promising in 19.
Historically, Michigan and Detroit have been very much tied to the national economy, whether it's the equity markets, whether it's unemployment, investment. Do you see any evidence that relationship is weakening, or do you see in the survey the fact that it actually dips down a little bit that would suggest that with all the turmoil after the midterm elections that may be affecting people's attitudes?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, whether it's at the national level or at the state level, I mean, companies look for certainty. Mm-hmm. They're looking for confidence in, you know, tell me what the rules are, and we'll live by those rules, and we'll play under those rules in the game. And I think, you know, whether it's trade issues at the global level, you know, there's just, I think, some uncertainty out there in terms of kind of what the playing field's going to look like, which creates, I think, some angst.
Would you include a new administration in Lansing as being that uncertainty? I mean, this is also in that same time frame, right? We get a new governor, new elected. She's just inaugurated on the 1st of January.
Well, I think everybody, you know, has felt very confident and comfortable with, you know, the last 8 years in terms of where the administration and where the economy has gone in Michigan, and I'm, you know, pretty confident that the governor, you know, 1 week in office, believes that Michigan's, you know, headed in the right direction and is going to keep moving in that direction.
How do you see them at Detroit level?
Well, I mean, you know, what we want and what we fully expect is that we have no indications that this administration is going to do anything to disrupt the flow of opportunities that we're seeing in Detroit. I think there's a full commitment on the administration's part to continue to support Detroit and other cities around the state. So I'm very optimistic about what the governor's economic development policies are going to be in terms of supporting Detroit.
It strikes me in the numbers, there's a kind of an implied contradiction. You got a 10-point swing between, has a large pool of skilled talent, educated talent for hire at a +8, and an educational system that's second to none at a -2. I wonder to what extent that duality is a real challenge. I mean, Michigan has had a real struggle with educational attainment. The story is getting worse. It's not getting better. It's happened through Democratic administration and Republican administrations. They don't seem to be getting their arms around this from a policy perspective. How much of a problem is that attracting business? You talk, the business wants certainty. I think we know that. We hear that all the time. How important is educational performance in K-12 to those decisions?
I think it's a critical importance. I mean, and along with infrastructure, along with other components of, you know, the whole business climate and how companies look at, you know, location decisions, cost of living, quality of life, right? We need to work and pull all of those levers to try to make sure that we've got an attractive place where people want to live, work, and do business. And so I think, you know, we've got to focus, and we continue to, I think, focus on education. Not just, you know, the K-12 and preschool, but all the way through, you know, skilled trades, associate degrees, higher education, 4-year degrees, You know, we need more talent in Michigan, period, on all levels. And so I think we've got to, you know, and I think this administration is going to be committed to focusing on that issue of education.
Is the education play in Detroit just as important as it is statewide?
It is. I mean, there's two choices you have to make, right? There is the choice to commit to put in the resources that are required in order to grow your talent base organically. And then there's the means to attract talent to the state and to Detroit. That's it. And if any of those things get out of sequence, then it puts pressure on businesses to decide where they want to plant their operations. So I hope there's no debate on that amongst those of us who have influence on these kind of educational decisions. Because if we're debating that, then you're in the wrong game, wrong place, wrong time.
Governor Snyder spent at least half of the time in office touting Michigan as the comeback story and Detroit as the comeback city. And that's all fine and well coming from him, and you would expect to hear that. But I'm curious as to what each of you hear with the prospects you're talking to. How much is that getting traction out there? Do people buy that story, or do they think it's really kind of political window dressing and that there's a lot more problems deep below the surface?
Oh, I firmly believe that, you know, it's not talk, it's action. I mean, I think part of our challenge now, Daniel, is perception hasn't quite caught up with reality in many ways. I mean, CEO Magazine annually goes out and talks to CEOs about the best and worst places to locate businesses. You know, Michigan has climbed 9 positions last year over the year before. We've gone from 36 to 27. 27th isn't great, but 5 years ago we were in the bottom 5. Site Selection Magazine ranks Michigan number 1 in the Midwest, number 5 nationally in terms of places to do business. So I think the message, you know, is getting out that Michigan is a great place to do business. When you look at, you know, the cost of doing business, when you look at the quality of life, when you look at the cost of living. You know, we've been out on the West Coast trying to attract companies and talk to businesses. Just recently, a company called KLA Tencor, they produce machinery and processes for the semiconductor business. They have 6,800 people working globally, their headquarters in Silicon Valley. They recently announced a location to move into the Ann Arbor area with about 500 people. And when you look at the cost of living and you look at the cost of labor, you know, it was a no-brainer for them to look at opening that operation right next to the University of Michigan and with, you know, the resources and the talent that we have here in the state of Michigan. So I think we've got, you know, a story to tell. We've got the product and we've got the facts to back it up.
You know, there's this expectation that you know, being number 27th, which is great, coming from where the state came from, that's great.
Right.
You know, people react to being number one. You know, the number 27th ranked football team you can't name. Right?
They don't even rank them that
right,
low.
Right. But what I want us to focus on as a state, and most certainly what we're focusing on in Detroit, is I want to be number one. Right? I want to win the national championship, like my wife's alma mater did last night.
in convincing fashion, I might add.
It was an epic
beatdown.
And so, see, so you remember that, right? But you don't remember that the number 2017 got beat down, right? So what we want to do is continue to create this atmosphere, and I don't necessarily, full disclosure, when I'm out on the road, I don't talk about Detroit coming back.
I agree.
That's kind of, I've just not drank that Kool-Aid yet, right? I talk about our competitive advantages, right? And what businesses are interested in buying is, what is your competitive advantage? All that other stuff is noise. So if I can lay out to them, and I know Jeff does this as well, is what's the competitive advantage of doing business in Detroit? And then if a transaction happens because of that, then that is where we want to spend our energies and time. So that's what I focus on. I don't talk about coming back.
Yeah, but competitive advantage isn't enough, is it?
It's enough if depending on who's buying.
Well, last year was a year of incentives in this town. You had Ford with the Michigan Central Depot, big incentive package, very controversial. Dan Gilbert with his Bedrock projects at Hudson's and the Monroe Block, and of course the Amazon project, which didn't get off the ground here. But all of that certainly seemed to suggest to me that there's a bit of a pay-to-play here. At least that's, and I'd be interested in whether you think that's going to continue and whether you're in an arms race, an incentives arms race, whether you want to be in it or not.
Well, you know, here's the reality.
These are the two incentive guys, by
the way. All right. The reality is that there is a cost to do business in any city, in any state, and in the space that we occupy as economic development professionals, we have to utilize the tools that are available to us in order to activate the opportunities that we seek. All right. So incentives doesn't make a bad deal good. It makes a good situation better. All right. So if you look at something like the Michigan Train Depot, what happened 30? What's been happening?
Nothing.
Are you generating any revenue?
Very little.
It's costing you.
It's costing.
I think that's a pretty classic case of utilizing some programs to activate opportunities, right? So it's just, you know, our will to do the things that we need to do in order to activate opportunities. And yes, there is a prescribed payback period of everything that we put on the table. We just don't arbitrarily go out and make these kinds of decisions without understanding that there is an economic impact and an expectation of economic impact that comes because of the utilization of incentives. But that's how we have to conduct our affairs. And I think it works well when you are strategic in how you use them.
And you have to make your case, right?
Always.
Well, and I would say, we don't lead with incentives, right?
Last thing on my mind.
We're trying to price a product or sell a product on value. Mm-hmm. The value of the infrastructure, the value of the talent in the education system, the value of quality of life and the cost of living. That's the compelling, I think, business case that we're trying to lead with and talk about when we're competing for whether it's, you know, projects like an Amazon or some of these other projects that, we're competing nationally and globally on. And incentives is kind of, I guess, the piece that gets the most, visibility, particularly when you get into, kind of public competitions for some of this stuff. But the other piece, Daniel, is, very few of the projects that we work on actually require incentives. I mean, day in and day out, our team, works across the state with companies and helping them in terms of growing their export business or working with them to connect small companies to large companies in terms of purchasing and buying products from our neighbors here in the state of Michigan. And so, that really is kind of the bread and butter of what we do. The incentive piece is, unfortunately, I think the piece that gets, the most visibility.
You know, Michigan has a history in Detroit of getting complacent in good times and then having a crisis and then reacting to the crisis and then things smooth out again. And the other thing it has from a policy perspective is a reputation for inconsistency. It tends to be very partisan. There are Republican answers to how to deal with things. There are Democrats. There's no consent. There's very little consensus. I see in the states like Ohio, there tends to be a little bit more consensus through administrations. Do you think that's going to smooth out a little bit now as we move into a new administration and we're now at the longer end of this economic expansion? Or do you think that's a fear that we are going to be dealing with that again?
No, I think we've gotten kind of past the a lot of the partisanship. I mean, in Lansing, you know, the House and the Senate and the new administration are talking about finding solutions to education, finding solutions to infrastructure. And so I'm optimistic about that, and that I think we've kind of, you know, gotten past the times of, you know, fighting amongst each other. Henry Ford, you know, once had a quote that said, you know, coming together is a beginning, staying together is progress, working together is success. And I think we've gotten to the successful stage where, you know, people believe that, you know, together we're going to move Michigan forward.
The survey talks about Michigan being a better than average place to grow a business. I sense, and as I look around and some of the work I do, there's an evolving entrepreneurial culture that really didn't exist when I came to this state 25 years ago. This was a big company state, and it was a big company town, and big companies ruled the roost. And if you didn't work for a big company, you were a loser. That's not so much the case now, and I think you see it in Detroit, and you see it, as you point out, in Ann Arbor. What's changed? What has changed and made entrepreneurialism, startups, cool?
I think it's a combination of having balance in your economy and having the need to, you can be successful without doing business with the big guy. And that has changed the dynamic of places like Detroit and places around the country where, you know, you can be literally be in your basement and be a tech entrepreneur and do very well in that space.
Right.
And you may not be selling to Ford. Your big customer may be on the other side of the world. And so being able to and capture, and I think this generation is okay with not having, you know, being a one or two person operation. I think they're okay with it. And we're most certainly okay with it because those are the companies that turn into larger enterprises. And so if we can help cultivate those opportunities in our city and in the state, I think it sets the state up for growth beyond what we've seen in the last 30, 40 years.
I think some of it's, we've actually targeted and worked on this effort for over a decade now to try to build the ecosystem to support, you know, young entrepreneurs. I think some of it's cultural, right? You're now seeing generations of CEOs and startup companies that are actually, you know, becoming successful.
Well, and this was one of the first entrepreneurial economies 100 years ago.
Right.
And you could argue that this is a cycle of history going back to kind of its roots.
I mean, just last week, a company over in Kalamazoo that does medical devices just got $77 million in venture capital funding. I think it was reported that it's the largest venture capital investment in a startup in Michigan's history. You had Doug Song and Duo Security out of Ann Arbor just got acquired by Cisco for over $2 billion. And I think that shows other people that it's possible.
That it's possible.
It's possible.
Let's shift gears to the macroeconomic environment. I don't need to tell anybody in this room that we got a lot going on nationally. You know, gyrating stock market closed December down. It was a disaster. It's continued into January. Trade tensions continue to cloud uncertainty. Tariffs raising costs for employers like automakers to the tune of $1 billion every quarter, or every month, I should say. The federal government's partial shutdown shows no sign of ending. I just wrote all these things down. Interest rates are rising despite from historic lows. What is the greatest threat to the Michigan economy?
I was going to say all the above. All the above.
Actually, I think it's probably all of
the above. Circle D.
I think maybe the threat is that we don't fix any of those.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? That we don't, you know, solve the shutdown, that we don't, handle and resolve some of our tariff and trade issues, and that we don't kind of create more of that stability to give companies here in Michigan and around the country that confidence to continue to keep investing.
I think, you know, our responsibility when those types of things happen at the local level.
I was going to get to that.
Yeah.
We've talked about that.
So, some of this stuff, you need to make sure we're secure at the local level. Some of these, you know, I don't think I was invited to the room when they decided that they were going to do trade adjustments or tariffs. They didn't invite me because I would have squashed that crap. But the deal is you have to deal with things at the local level. And so what are we doing at the local level to make sure that our business climate is still attractive enough to attract the investments that we want? Now, if we take a posture and make it more difficult for us to do business with operations that want to come here, then that layers the problem. And so that is our responsibility to make sure that our local business climate is one that is attractive enough to continue to do business with the folks that we're trying to bring into our city.
Jeff?
Yeah, I think it's, Kevin's right. I mean, it's making sure that we keep our business costs reasonable, that we keep, you know, showing the value proposition to companies about why Michigan's a great place to do business and help them, you know, on the margins in terms of whether it's access to talent, you know, improving our infrastructure and, you know, making sure that we don't pile on.
So how do you prepare for, at the local level, when you got local problems coming down the pike and you know they're coming? General Motors is idling 5 plants, 2 of them in Southeast Michigan. Pretty good chance most or all those are gonna close. 8,000 salaried layoffs. Ford Motor Company in the second quarter has got their own restructuring coming. Don't know that's gonna hit plants. But a lot of this is going to impact Michigan and Michigan employment. What can, when you're in your shoes in advance, like you know this is coming in some way, you don't know the exact contours of it yet, what do you do, if anything?
Well, I think you do a couple of things. One, you know, you create, again, the business case for those companies of if they're going to contract, why they want to do it here, you know, and keep as much here in the state of Michigan as possible. I think you also keep working in those other spaces, in areas like the defense industry, in the area of agribusiness, in the area of IT and cyber and business finance, and try to, you know, also grow those other segments of the economy so that we can balance out the fluctuation that's going on here in the marketplace.
So I think there, you know, for what, you know, when you read things like that, for 2019 for us at DEGC, we really want to double down on 3 things, right? First, when things are going great in economic development is when you go out and do business attraction the most, right? When the unemployment rate is low, we go out and we go and try to bring as many opportunities to the community as we can. So we're going to double down on going out and trying to attract business to the city. We're going to work on making sure, number two, we're going to work on making sure that the facilities that we need in order to absorb the opportunities that we're able to attract are readily available, whether that's buildings, whether that's readily prepared sites, right? And thirdly, we have to continue to invest in our neighborhood development, right? That's all I will be focusing on in 2019, period. Because when you hear things like contraction, and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it, but it happens. But our job is to continue to work very hard to make the business case to bring more opportunities in, because absorption is a big thing, right? It really is. I come from Atlanta, Georgia. And I will tell you, if, you know, name a company, if Home Depot decides to lay off 2,000 workers, it might make a headline, but it ain't going to devastate Atlanta, right?
Well, you're walking into my next question.
This is not planned. It's just this yin and yang thing.
Well, no, the automakers account for a much smaller percentage of the overall employment in the state than they did 10 years, certainly 20. I mean, if I wouldn't bore you with the numbers, but it would astonish you at how much smaller General Motors, for example, hourly workforce is in Michigan than it was 10 or 15 years. It's just astonishing drop.
My question is it easier to absorb these kinds of cutbacks in 2019 than it would have been in 2019, or excuse me, 1999?
Well, the short answer is yes. Yeah. I mean, if you are an employee, that's, you know, one of those statistics.
Correct.
The answer is no.
No.
Right. But in terms of that absorption and that balancing act, absolutely, we are much better positioned for that.
You're making a case for economic diversification is what you're really doing when this happens.
I mean, as the economy and these headwinds are blowing, Dan Gilbert isn't saying he's not going to put up, you know, the Hudson's Tower, right? Or the Monroe Block. He's saying, you know, we see a bright future, and we're betting on that future and moving ahead.
That's true, but Dan Gilbert self-finances most of what he does.
God bless him.
And on the other, and on the other hand, you got a company like General Motors that stops renovations of certain facilities in Warren and others because they're trying to get to generate a lot more cash. So I mean,
but they
have an answer to a board.
But you've got a company like General Motors that is making significant investments in terms of, you know, tech workers up
right.
at the Warren Tech Center, and betting heavily in autonomous and mobility spaces and electrification. And so you've got, you know, some shifting going on even within those companies and those markets, right?
That's exactly right. And I did want to ask you before we were finished about, you know, Governor Snyder and his team invested very heavily in what I call Auto 2.0, mobility, autonomy, electrification. It's where the industry is going, not exclusively. It's one of the two tracks going forward. How is that developing from your perspective? Do you think that we're going to see more of that in the coming year and in the next few years? Or is it really going to be driven more by the auto companies and the major suppliers?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, right? I mean, you know, the state level, we've invested in the American Center for Mobility and some of these other kinds of resources to, you know, kind of create that infrastructure, similar to investing in that entrepreneurial infrastructure.
Right.
So I think it's going to continue to be kind of parallel, you know, whether it's electrification and the powertrain, whether it's autonomy, whether it's new materials, you know, there's just a lot of change going on in addition to things like, you know, IT and cybersecurity within the automotive sector. And so I think we are very bullish on kind of where our companies here in Michigan are positioning themselves for that future. You're seeing a lot of young tech companies that are coming into Michigan or sprouting up here in Michigan, and particularly in Southeast Michigan, to be close to some of these companies. You know, Ford has talked about with the train station,
right.
You know, not only putting 2,500 of their own people, but another 5,000
right.
of suppliers and tech companies.
Is that going to be Detroit's bid to really get in the autonomy and the mobility game? Is Ford coming into Corktown?
One of many. I think our region, all of the counties that are associated with this region are in that space. And so if we can continue to be, we want to be the center of all of that, whether that's in Oakland County, Wayne County, Macomb County, we want to be the center of all of it. So when we go out into the marketplace and talk about the strength of this region, it's based on the investments that we're making in Automation Alley. It's based on the investments we're making at M-City. It is logical to think that we could be the market dominant leader when it comes down to mobility and autonomous vehicle technology. And that is what will propel the new automotive industry in our city. So the investments that GM is making and others, we're all for that. All right?
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, it's interesting that the audience had many of the same questions that you, Daniel, had. But I'm going to focus on a few of them in a slightly different way. And I'm going to start with you, Jeff. And I'll tell you that some of the audience members are pretty concerned that Michigan is heading into a recession. I wonder what you think and which industries in Michigan you think might be the most recession-proof.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be a recession, but I think, you know, certainly maybe the velocity of growth isn't going to be as strong potentially going forward. I mean, you look at this economy in the state of Michigan and you think about, you know, we're one of the top agriculture producing states in America. Just this past summer, just north of Lansing, a company called Glanbia out of Dublin, Ireland, made an investment of $450 million, 259 people that are going to go to work in a new milk processing plant. Because if you didn't know this, about 25% of all the milk that's produced by cows in the state of Michigan is exported. And so, you know, farmers are paying to ship it out of the state to be processed. Well, this plant is going to take all of that capacity and keep it here in the state of Michigan for cheese and whey products. So it creates more value, more economic wealth for our farmers. And so the ag business is one that's, I think, you know, recession-proof in many ways because we're all going to continue to eat. Tourism certainly is another area that's important to the state's economy. And just because today is a spring day in Detroit, if you'd like some pure Michigan winter, just head north. There's lots of snow in northern Michigan right now for outdoor winter enthusiasts. So I think there's a number of other parts of our economy that are hitting on all cylinders and will help us as we go forward.
Kevin, any to add?
Well, no, I don't think there's any business that's recession proof, all right? Except one, that's the funeral home director. Other than that, I think there's no business that is recession proof. What we want to do though is kind of, you know, lessen the blow and find and innovate so that we're prepared for the future.
And the lead question here is really for you. This one got more votes than any of the others. People are concerned about what kind of economic development is really planned for outside of downtown Detroit. What about the neighborhoods of Detroit? And I wonder if you could give us your thoughts about that.
Well, you know, the concern, I think it builds upon seeing that all this dynamic movements that has happened in downtown Detroit and Midtown is not going out into the neighborhoods. And so the programs that we offer through our Motor City Match program that we work closely with the mayor on, as well as Motor City Restore, those are really neighborhood-centric programs. And, you know, with the amount of retail that escapes the city of Detroit, is staggering. It's $2.5 billion a year that is not spent locally, all right? So that means that there's opportunities if you create the right type of environment for some of those dollars to be retained in the city, and that is because of services that are not here in our city. So our programming efforts for neighborhood development is centered on creating retail opportunities in our neighborhoods, thereby following the growth into the neighborhoods with new housing opportunities that we're seeing to begin to pop up. So I'm very concerned about it. That's why we're delivering the services that we're delivering, because it makes a big difference. If the neighborhoods aren't winning, it doesn't really necessarily matter what happens in other parts of the city.
Okay, there's a question here for both of you about your opinions about our immigration policies with respect to our skills gap and our future talent and economic development. If you could each comment, starting with you, Jeff.
Well, I think, you know, as I mentioned, we need more talent, and you know, there's, in my mind, three ways you get it. One starts, you know, potentially 18 years from today, with that baby that's conceived and, you know, is born and goes to work. The other is to grow it from within, and we've got a lot of work to do in terms of, you know, training and talent and the whole kind of workforce development side of the house. And then the third is we've got to attract more talent. Kids that have left here that want to come back to Michigan for a job, or people from other countries that want to come here and make a better life. And I think historically we have been a state that has done that. When you think back to, you know, Herbert Dow and Fred Meyer and Hank Meyer and others. And so, you know, we need a welcoming policy, and I think, you know, Governor Whitmer is very committed to, you know, being a state that is welcoming to everyone.
Well, I mean, I can't add much more that, you know, when I read the history of Detroit specifically, heck, the whole city was built on immigration.
Darn right.
Unless I missed something.
No, you didn't.
So I'm not so sure why we're even talking about this in that regard. So it's just a matter of being very thoughtful, and I believe in thoughtful immigration, but I don't know how thoughtful it was back in the early 1900s when you had folks that looked like me come up from Alabama on a train to come to go to work. That wasn't thoughtful. You needed a warm body and you had a willingness to work, you can come make a difference in this city. And I think that if you take it from that perspective, a lot of the issues that we're talking about regarding immigration should be muted in that regard. That's Kevin's opinion, by the way.
Jeff, you gave two examples earlier of great examples where venture capital made a big difference for two particular companies. But there's a question here about what can be done to bring more venture capital to the state. Do you have ideas about that? And actually, the question's really for both of you.
Well, you know, I mean, first off, there is more venture capital coming into the state of Michigan. So we are seeing a growth in that. I mean, just this past fall, we actually mirrored the Detroit homecoming and the Cranes homecoming effort. We actually brought back a couple of hundred venture capitalists from the coasts out in California, New York, invited them back in for a couple of days, showed them around Detroit in Ann Arbor to show them what's going on in the state of Michigan. Because a lot of them really, you know, maybe went to school at U of M and left. And maybe haven't been back since they were in college. And so we're very proactive in terms of trying to, you know, expose more and more people in the venture capital in, you know, the early stage capital space. You know, we also have a lot of angel investors and people that are, you know, investing themselves directly here within the state of Michigan. And so I think, you know, that is an area where, you know, with these successes, breeds more success.
And I think that's where the entrepreneurial spirit makes a big difference when we're creating companies and startups that are attractive enough to attract venture capital. Mm-hmm. So some of this is our ability to create entrepreneurial experiences and get a reputation for that. And I think then the venture capital will continue to follow.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you one last question before I move to the lightning round, and I didn't make this one up, but somebody here wants to know if each of your units are adequately funded.
It's like my natural default is to say no, right? It's like.
By the way, my boss is here too, and I'm going to tell him that I'm not adequately funded either.
I can't help myself. What we want to continue to do is a lot of the questions that came about through, you know, like for an example, Motor City Match. You know, would we like more funding for that? Absolutely. Right. We're growing opportunities in this city by placing strategic companies around the neighborhoods. Would we need more funding for that? Absolutely. There are demands that Detroiters place on our agencies to do certain things, and sometimes the demand doesn't necessarily connect to the supply of dollars. So we're always in search of resources to continue to push the things that we need to do to change what Detroit looks like and how it performs, and that takes resources.
You know, we're thankful for all the resources that that we get, and I think, you know, the positive thing is that a lot of people in the legislature in Lansing understand the importance and the value of economic development and the value of having consistency in our economic development activities. And so I think, you know, would we always like more money? Sure, but I think that it's not so much about the amount, it's what we do with it. And I would say also that, you know, partnering with Kevin and other economic development organizations around the state of Michigan, you know, we are working well as a team to try to deliver on our, you know, results and our outcomes and what our promise is.
Great. We've got a few minutes now. I'm going to give you guys a lightning round. I'm going to start with Kevin. Jeff, you're next. And I'm going to ask you a few questions as quick as you can. Let's go through the lightning round here. So, starting with you, Kevin, one of your favorite songs.
Who would have thought I'd know you this way?
Jeff.
Daddy's Little Girl.
Okay. Favorite team growing up?
Dallas Cowboys.
Jeff.
Wolverines.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Kevin.
It changed over time, though. Go green.
Last book you read?
Sapiens.
Michelle Obama's book.
Okay. One of your favorite movies?
The Quiet Man with John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara.
Boy. Wow. Shawshank Redemption.
Okay. Something on your bucket list?
I want to go to Africa. Africa.
Australia, New Zealand.
Okay. Who would you like to have lunch with?
John Lewis.
Oh, good.
Daniel Howells.
I'll pay.
We can arrange for that one. That one we can arrange for.
Mother Teresa. And Daniel Howells.
We can arrange for one of those.
Oh,
all right. Okay. This one I'm going to change a little bit. The sport you played best?
Football.
Golf.
The sport you wish you played best?
Golf.
Golf.
Okay, two more. Describe Detroit in one word.
Trending.
Yeah, I think I used this one last year, but I think it's still apropos, and that's rising.
Okay. Last question. What advice would you give to your 25-year-old self?
Take more risk.
Plastics?
Thanks, everyone. Here comes...
Hey, Jeff, Kevin, Daniel, thanks for kicking us off in 2019 so terrifically. Aura Peskovitz, thanks for doing a great job as presiding officer. David Baker, you did some incredible work on the survey. Folks, don't forget those Albion College people out there and their summer internships. Great to see you. Hope to see you in 2 weeks with Mayor Duggan. This meeting's now adjourned. Thank you.